Welcome to a special edition of Shattered Lives, Reach Ireland's crime podcast. I'm Michael O'Toole, crime and defence editor, and I'm talking to you from Camp Fawar in Syria, where 133 members of the Defence Force's 68th Infantry Group have been serving as peacekeepers for the last 6 months. Their mission comes to an end next month, and so does the Irish large-scale presence here. We first came here in 2013 to help supervise the 40-year truce between Syria and Israel, who invaded the Golan in 1973 and took a chunk of that land, which they still occupy. That mission for the Irish is coming to an end next month. So in this episode of Shattered Lives, we're going to be talking to some of the 133 soldiers who have been serving here for the last 6 months. It's a fantastic mission, and it's a really, really interesting series of chats that we've had with these soldiers. So the first soldier we spoke to at the camp was a very important one, and that was Lieutenant Colonel Oliver Clear. He is the main man. He is the officer commanding the 68th Infantry Group, so he is in charge of all 133 Irish soldiers in that group. He's obviously a very busy man, but he rather kindly took time out of his schedule to talk to us as soon as we arrived, and we had a sit-down interview with him. You're going to be hearing three voices of journalists throughout this interview, not only myself, but I had two colleagues with me. Firstly, there was Niall O'Connor from The Journal, and then there was Conor Gallagher from The Irish Times. And just while we start, I'd like to place on the record the thanks and gratitude of all three of us to the Defence Forces for their assistance on this trip, particularly the Defence Forces Press Office, including Sergeant Rena Kennedy Killeen, who was with us the whole time. We're very grateful. Anyway, Lieutenant Colonel Clear. We wanted to ask Lieutenant Colonel Clear how much the conflict in neighbouring Israel and Palestine had affected his mission. We know that violence erupted in the Hamas attack on the 7th of October and the massive Israel response following that on Gaza. And we know that tens of thousands of people have been killed. The conflict has spilled over into Lebanon, where we have 330 Irish soldiers. There have also been some issues in Syria, including in the area where the Irish patrol. So we wanted to ask Lieutenant Colonel Clear if that conflict was causing problems on his patch.
In one sense, I'm going to say no, in that the job hasn't changed. We're still here to provide a robust reserve to the mission. In the other, it's very obvious that there are a number of escalations in the area. There's a lot more kinetic activity that we would see. There's a lot more movement on both sides that you're going to see on a daily basis. And that, I suppose, just leads us to be more aware of what is going on around us, and it means that we have to plan more about what we're doing and be more deliberate about what we potentially could encounter at any time day or night.
Tensions are just generally higher level, is that fair to say?
Absolutely, I would say yes, and I suppose for us the real risk is probably not us being targeted, but us arriving into something that is either occurring or has just occurred. So we have to be more careful about our movements and more deliberate about where we go and when we go there, and being, even if you want for a better, being more loud in our presence, so that people know we're there and are deliberately aware of our presence.
One of the lads mentioned the kind of incidents on the Alpha side intended to distract the IDF from what they're doing down south. Is that accurate?
I couldn't comment on what the intention is, but it's clear that the amount of activity up on the technical fence on the border has increased from both sides. I think they're both worried. In terms of politically, I can't comment on what both sides think. Yeah, it's beyond me, I think. Yeah.
And could you tell us about the occasions in which you and your personnel have had to go into Groundhog on this tour?
I think at this stage it's four. Invariably, they come with some sort of warning. We either hear something, or we see something, or there's an indication of actions ongoing somewhere from one of the posts. And Groundhog really is, it sounds like running into a bunker, but it is actually just, it's a mitigation measure in case you either become part of something that's happening around you, or that something lands short that's not deliberately, you know, I don't think that we are a deliberate target in this mission. But we, again, we're here, we need to be careful about what we see and what we do and our presence, And the best place to do that is if there's something going on and you're not involved in it, is to be in a bunker.
Did the events after the October 7th weigh on you as a commander? Were the risks higher for your personnel?
I'll answer that question very honestly. The one thing that has struck me is you have responsibility for 130 other people. I don't think the events changed that, but they made me very much aware of how much that responsibility is. All of us are here. It's not the safest environment in the world. A simple traffic accident up to around falling short or in action, it does make things, you consider them more. You like to hear every patrol coming back in the gate, shutting down and saying, we're back.
And how has the training, we saw you at the MRE, how has the training before going to Undoff, how has that helped?
Thinking back now, and I briefed you earlier today about the teamwork, we are a very complex team, highly trained. And the training that you saw was brought us together as a group. It probably didn't add a massive amount to the expertise we had, it just combined us. And the bit of robustness and deliberate, you've seen it's quite a deliberate and robust training process. I think that just brings us up to a heightened level of teamwork together. And what I hope you see over the next couple of days while you're here is that teamwork, how it affects itself on the ground. We need people to do their job every day and not make mistakes or do it to a level that keeps us functioning in that environment all of the time.
You said that a bit ago, but 5 months into the 6 month deployment, very complex, potentially dangerous, specific job the Irish guys have. Also, this other massive job coming up to get everything home. Is this a dangerous area, time for a mission, in that you can see the end goal inside, people are maybe looking home, getting home to their families, home comforts, and also possibly being distracted by this huge logistics job?
I would always say the first 2 or 3 weeks and the last 2 or 3 weeks. The first 2 or 3 weeks while you're learning the environment and where you're operating and what you're doing and getting used to each other. And the last 2 or 3 weeks because the chances of becoming complacent raise massively. We're comfortable in the environment. We're comfortable with our equipment. We know each other. We know the roads. We know the routes. That's the time. And I think that's where I'm going to earn the rank that I have, to try and keep people focused on what we need to do, when we need to do it, and to get out of here safely.
And what is it?
You go first.
What is it a question of? Is it a question of keeping people focused and making sure they keep their eyes on the prize?
Yeah, and again, I spoke to you already about the small things, doing the small things right. We have lots of, even a simple patrol has a number of steps you must do right, and do well, and plan. And it's very easy, as you get complacent, to take some of those steps out. What we're trying to do towards the end of this trip is make sure we do the same patrol we did on the first day in the same way, with the same professionalism. And our natural tendency is to, I know he knows that, or I know. But we still do a full set of orders. We still check the equipment. We still check the comms. Still check the weapons. And we still do a deliberate plan on the route we pick to go on.
Obviously, it's coming to an end now, and you're going home, and this is the end of Undoff for Ireland.
In part, we will leave a number of staff officers here.
Yeah.
Ireland will still have a presence here, yeah.
But I suppose the main peacekeeping mission is coming to an end. What's the feeling with yourself, for yourself and your officers, being part of that kind of that moment where Ireland withdraws from the mission?
It's certainly for us. It's historic. You read about these things in history books, and you read about them on the paper, and many of us in the military, it's one of the unique functions of the military. We get to be part of both the national history and the history of the UN, and sometimes you don't notice it in passing. I will be aware of it this time as we walk out the gate that, it's 10 years, there's 20 photographs on the walls in the room around us. That is 130 people by 20 who have left a legacy in this area, and we'll end it. And for me, it'll be part of history, and it's something I would certainly mark on the day and notice it.
So our next interviewee is Captain Jerry Duff. I've known Captain Duff more than a decade. I think I first met him in 2012 on a trip with the Defence Forces over to UNIFIL in southern Lebanon. A very interesting character. He started off as a private, worked his way up to sergeant, and then went for a commission. So he became an officer, essentially, and he is now a captain in the Defence Forces. And his role in UNDOF is the operations officer. So in cooperation and in conjunction with Lieutenant Colonel Clear, he decides when and where the Irish are deployed. He will make reference to the FRC. That is the United Nations designation for the Irish group. It stands for Force Reserve Company. And what that means basically is that the Irish are the emergency response unit for the entire United Nations force in Syria, which is called UNDOF, and there are about 1,100 soldiers in that. So essentially, if it hits the fan, it's the Irish who have to go and rescue colleagues and provide real assistance to them. And one of the things that Captain Duff will be talking about in this interview is the importance of training and how they translated that training from theory over in Ireland into reality on the ground in Syria. Captain Jerry Duff, what is your role in the 60th Infantry Group?
I'm the operations officer for the Force Reserve Company here in UNDOF. So my job is to task the FRC in our routine operations and also be the point of contact with the force headquarters for a quick reaction force.
So do you have to deploy the quick reaction force effectively, is it?
It's done through me and the commanding officer from the force commander of UNDOF. That's our primary role with our quick reaction force.
So could that be quite difficult and quite tense at times, can it?
Yes, definitely. It's our primary role here that we have our soldiers on 15 minutes notice to move at all times. And the rest of the unit who aren't on QRF are on 30 minutes notice to move. So we have to be always ready to go out the gate in our armoured vehicles to assist other peacekeepers or other colleagues within the area of operations, which we're always ready to do.
And how has the mission been for you, Captain?
Absolutely brilliant. It's my 8th deployment overseas. It's my first one to UNDOF. It's been absolutely brilliant. Best experience I've had in my time in the Defence Forces, and that's all down to the team that we have around us. There's 130 of us, and we all get on really well, and we all work very well. And it's a high tempo job, which the unit have responded to absolutely excellent.
Why is it so different?
It's a different role compared to other deployments, the likes of UNIFIL and the EU missions. And because of we're a huge asset for the entire mission, we're the force commander's asset, so we're like his insurance policy. And that instills a huge level of pride in the Irish unit here, that we're responsible for other peacekeepers from the other nationalities here in the event that something goes wrong outside those gates.
Now, we last met you when you were the training officer at the mission readiness exercise at the Glen of Imaal before the 60th Infantry Group went out to UNDOF. So you were basically in charge of the training. How would you assess, how has the training stood the personnel in real life?
It's been excellent, because the way we train is the way we have to operate. So we purposely designed the training package back in Ireland to be very tough, and we made no apologies for that because of the environment that we're operating in. Even prior to coming here, we didn't know the events that were going to happen in October, which has had huge implications on the UNDOF mission and our colleagues across in UNIFIL. So the tough training that we completed at home has definitely stood to us here in the mission area.
Can you describe how the violence in Gaza has impacted the mission up here?
We've had an increase of, you've seen in Lebanon, we've had an increase of armed elements operating in the vicinity of the Alpha Line and the technical fence, which has been seen as to try and distract Alpha Side forces from their mission in Gaza. So usually that type of activity wouldn't be quite normal or quite regular here, but it most definitely since October we've seen a sharp increase.
I'm not sure if you're allowed to tell us, but if you are, have the quick reaction force had to be deployed in any incidents?
We've been deployed on numerous occasions, but we rehearse live every week out into one of the UN positions as if it's a live scenario. That's to maintain the readiness of the troops and to keep us on top of our primary role.
My name is Tara Khan and I'm a captain in the FRC in Ondoff.
What is your job here, Captain?
My job here is primarily the 2IC of the MEC company and the training officer, but right now I'm the QRF commander for the week.
What is a QRF, tell me?
A QRF is a quick reaction force that is moving from Camp Fire and we're able to deploy in a rapid response way throughout the AOR.
And just you obviously respond to situations, mm-hmm. we'd say, in the area of operations, but can you tell us about what those operations look like?
They can vary, really. We're on 15 minutes notice to move, and it can be anything from cordoning an area, for, dealing with OXOs, or sorry, unexploded ordnance, to the CASEvac, so casualty evacuation from different posts with different UN personnel, to just general OMRs or patrolling around the area.
So you're like the fire brigade, you know, be here in less than 15 minutes and get out the door.
So we've 15 minutes notice move, I'd say, and we have to be quick, efficient in all our drills, and therefore we have to practice them every week and then we're at the gate within 15 minutes at the minute. Because we're rehearsing so much, we're in and around between 4 to 6 minutes and then we're out the gate by then.
And is that day and night?
Day and night, 15 minutes, yeah, 24/7. So obviously we're not in uniform every day, or all hours a day, but we have our grab bags and contingency plans within the vehicles.
May I ask, is it exhilarating?
It is when you hear the call, I suppose, on the radios, the heartbeats go up, I suppose, and then you're running around the place. Depending on where you are in the camp, I probably might be up at the top of the camp. Some people might be out training or doing their bits, and you just have to get here as quick as possible.
Sergeant Michael Cran, I'm the Mohawk Sergeant with 1 Platoon based here in the 68th Infantry Group, and I'm from Ruskin in County Roscommon.
What's your job here, tell us, in Ondoff?
So I'm the Mohawk Sergeant within the 1 Platoon, so my job is the looking after the maintenance of the Mohawks, the crewing of the Mohawks, and looking after the bodies that are underneath me, my corporals and privates. So on a daily basis, as you seen yesterday, I was on QRF, on Quick Reaction Force. So I walk off 15 minutes to notice to move when I'm on QRF, and basically we're deployed, as you've seen yesterday, 15 minutes to notice anywhere in the area of operations. So I can crew between the weapon station and also drive the Mohawks along with the rest of the privates and the corporals in the platoon.
You've been, we'll say, you've done 4 tours here, I suppose, and then you've been to Chad and you've been to other locations. Can you just tell me how this differs, this mission here, differs, say, from the Leb, from Chad, from wherever else you've been?
So I suppose in Chad, I was on the first trip on the 97th Infantry Battalion in Chad, and that was a greenfield site. That was basically the Irish Army deploying to a greenfield site in Africa, where we moved everything from the Knives and Forks right up to the APCs over to, as I said, a greenfield site that had nothing in it. We set up our camp, and we did patrols. To move from there to Lebanon, I suppose. Lebanon, I deployed there in 2017 with the 110th Infantry Battalion. And as we all know, UNIFIL is a well-established mission. It's been going on a long time. The Irish have, you know, great relationships there with the Lebanese. So that mission is well-established. I came over here on the 46th Infantry Group in 2014, and I deployed to the Alpha site. So the Israeli side was my first mission over there. I deployed over here with the 60th, 62nd and 68th over to the Bravo side in Cantua. This mission differs to all the other missions, both in UNIFIL and Chad. This is a company strength, company working as it should, with everything that it needs. It has its armour, it has its engineer support, it has its ordnance support, and it has its different cells. So this is the best example of a company working to its fullest strengths within the defence forces in Syria here. This has been a great mission. The people we work with here, the Irish, the other nationalities as well, all working together to do our job, and the FRC, and no more so than them, doing their job to the best of their ability. And it's sad that we're leaving, and I'm pretty sure that the Syrians and all the other contingents here would be sad to see us go as well.
Your question, my man?
I'm just going to ask, why have you come back so often?
I suppose every so often, every 2 years, you would find yourself deployed with the MOAGs. So Syria here, I came back very quickly on the 16th, 67th. We were, COVID, I was at home. There wasn't a lot going on. An opportunity came up to come back over again. But also, this mission here appeals to me because you're working very closely with the troops. But you're training and qualified, being a MOAG instructor, you're getting to work with the MOAGs firsthand over here. You have to have them ready to go for the QRF patrols every week. So you're getting to do your job to the best of your ability over here and working with the troops. And that's what I enjoy doing. It's challenging, it's rewarding. You know, for any of the guys here on their first trip overseas, this has to be the be-all and end-all for them in their career so far. You know, this is a very, very rewarding mission area. And I can't see anyone leaving here. Anyone that has come here will definitely leave a better soldier on their first mission.
Captain Cahalones.
Captain, you've just got your medal for your service here. Can you just tell us about kind of how that feels on today, and obviously you've been here now for the duration?
Yeah, I suppose it's been a pleasure to serve this unit. The medal is only recognition of the service that we've done here. Ultimately, it's about Ireland delivering a team to a mission area and essentially doing the job that we've been trained for.
And just if you can just tell me maybe if there was any kind of standout moments from the trip?
I think some of the highlights of the trip for me is kind of seeing the team develop and grow, all the different parts of the team coming together and kind of becoming really proficient and competent in any area of the unit as the mission develops.
This is obviously your first mission overseas, Captain?
Correct, yeah.
How was the reality compared to the planning, if you know what I mean?
It's kind of what we train for at home. You don't know what the environment's going to look like until you get here, and it's a mixed match of different personnel from all across the country. So to see that kind of forged together is an interesting experience, and the training at home certainly prepares us for coming out here.
And would you do it again?
100%. Absolutely. Love overseas, the team environment, the culture, it's all excellent. Everyone is very good.
And were there any difficult moments for you?
The difficult moments come, obviously you'll miss your families at home. There's small issues that can arise due to the work we do, but it's all kind of forged resilience again within the team, and people's ability to problem solve really improves throughout the mission.
Hi, my name is CQ Sabrina Roach. I'm part of the 68th Infantry Group and I am the Transport CQ.
And can you just tell us what the job you do here and how you do it?
Okay, my job is to make sure that, well, I'm in charge of the transport group, and it's my job to ensure that all the cars are maintained and are ready to go for the FRC.
It's challenging for anyone to come out here for the full 6 months, we'd say. But it's also challenging if you've got kids at home and you've got a family at home. Can you just tell me about that challenge that you've obviously had to come to and deal with, and you know how you manage that as a mammy at home and a soldier here?
Well, I'm a mom of three children. My husband is in the Defence Forces also. He was in Kosovo last year. He came home in May, and then there was a quick turnaround and we had to get the family adjusted because I formed up in August to come to Undaf. My son is in cadet training also, so he's busy with that at the moment.
Is it difficult being away from your family?
It is difficult. There's a lot of mental preparation. The kids have to mentally prepare for me to go. We have to make plans. We have to make sure that everybody is looked after and everyone is on board. I find that being out here, it's great because there's internet, so I'm constantly contactable for them.
So it's not like the lab in the 90s or the 80s where you got one phone call a week?
No.
You can contact them at a moment's notice, and they can contact you.
I can contact them, they can contact me, and I'm always available through Revolut when they need money, so there's no problems there.
And are they looking forward to you coming home?
They are. It's after being a very quick 5 months. It's been quick for them because they're doing their thing at home, and it's been very quick for me. Very busy wrapping up, getting everything manifested and ready to go home.
Next, we're going to hear from a range of soldiers of all ranks. When we were at Camp Fawar, we were fortunate to be there to witness the medal presentation ceremony. Just to explain, every soldier on an overseas tour and who completes a certain number of days on the mission, I think around 90, gets a medal. It's a pretty big deal, and you could see how happy the soldiers, particularly those on their first mission, were to get their medal. So we spoke to a few of them after the ceremony.
My name is Private Darren Brennan, and I'm 24 years old, and home unit 6th Battalion Athlone.
Right, okay. Why did you come on this mission, Darren?
Well, I came for the mission because this is why I joined the army. I joined the army to go overseas and experience just different things that I won't expect at home. Really.
And is this your first mission?
This is my first mission, yeah.
Okay. So what have you made of it?
It's just something you can't really describe for people who haven't done it. Like, with training, like the drills we've done back at home in the Glen, that they really do apply over here in Syria. The compliments to the officers and the senior NCOs who helped us get ready for it. Like,
see, from the outside, people like me, a civilian like me, would go, God, that's a dangerous mission, and, you know, quite nerve-wracking. Is it enjoyable?
I enjoy it. I enjoy the soldier and stuff like that. Like, getting call-outs, getting, like, groundhogs and stuff like that. Some people will get afraid. That's when the adrenaline comes in. You're kind of, like, smiling while you're running around, getting stuff ready.
So it's what you train for?
Yeah.
And is there a big difference from the training and the reality?
No. No, not really. In the Glen, like, you're there 2 weeks and you're like, why am I doing this? Why am I doing that? And then when you come over here, our first Sunday here, about 7:30 in the morning, bang, we get the call, groundhog, going to the bunkers. And the drills we did in the Glen really actually did come to help us over here in the Syria.
Is homesickness ever a problem, or are you so busy?
You're kind of busy, in fairness. You just keep going. Like, the first few weeks there, you just fly by, and you only notice the days going by. Every day, like, you're just experiencing something new, and you're just keeping busy yourself, like.
I suppose you'll have memories that'll last a lifetime from this.
Oh, yeah, like, the memories here, like, yeah, even, like, stuff in training, like, you go back home and you tell your friends who are not in the army, and they're like, how are you finding that enjoyable? And it's like, well, you just have to be there to they experience it.
What, do you have any other family members in the Defence Forces?
No, I'm actually the first one in my family to go overseas and join the Irish Army.
Right. And what made you join them?
Well, I always had a good interest in the army, and seeing the lads going around when I was a young lad doing, like, the banks and stuff like that. And then I got experience with my neighbour who came back from Chad. And when he came back from Chad, he actually gave me a UN patch. So I kind of cherished that. And I thought, oh, look at this, lads. I have a patch from the Irish Army boys. So that's kind of always how I found where I got my first interactions with the Army. And then I went to college, and then I experienced the college life, and I just knew that wasn't for me. And I just went home and told my dad, like, here, I'm going to join the army. That's what I want to do.
How did that go down?
Fair. My mother actually took it well. It was actually my father. My father was just wondering, why you not join the guards instead? But I said, no, the Irish Army, I just thought it was a better experience, and you'd do things that no one else in what I thought in the parish will never do.
And what were you studying, if you don't mind me asking?
I was actually studying medical technology in LIT.
And you gave that up to join the Defence Forces?
I did. It was during COVID times, and I was at home behind the desk doing lectures, and I was just like, one day it just clicked me. It's like, I can't do this. I can't sit behind the desk 7 days a week. I can't do this. So,
do you think you made the right decision?
100%. I think I've never been happier. I said the last 2 years, from training, recruit training, doing courses back home in Athlone, and then coming over here.
Corporal John Shelkey, 768th Infantry Group, Gundock.
Private Gary Shevin from the 27th Battalion.
Lads, you've both been abroad, but this is your first trip in Undoff, I believe. Could I ask you how it differs from your previous appointments?
For myself, it's every mission I've done so far is different in terms of the mission itself, different jobs. Here in Undoff, we're the quick reaction force, so we're 15 minutes notice to move. If the call goes out, we have to rush down to the cars, make sure the weapons are mounted, we're ready to go out the gate in 15 minutes, and it could be anything we could be tasked with. So it's different to UNIFIL in the sense where you do more patrols, and there is that QRF element in UNIFIL, but it's different to here.
Just for myself, first one to Syria as well. I've been in Lebanon 3 times, but this one here, much better mission. You're a wee bit busier, especially with the Moags, but it's grand.
It seems more military focused, proper soldier in inverted commas. Like, is that fair to say?
Yeah, you could say it like that, but still over in Lebanon, stuff can happen. And you always hear stuff on the news about Syria, and especially for my family, you know, when I was coming over here, they were worried because I'd been in Lebanon a few times. They were thinking, right, it's okay, but it's never okay. You're taking a risk coming away.
I suppose when all that stuff happened in Gaza, it might make your family a little bit more worried as well.
100%, yeah. They're always going to think the worst, but I think it's just in us. We just plough on, just get it done.
How do you reassure family members back home?
Just be honest with them. Like, we get briefs now every Saturday morning, and you just have to be honest with them.
And did you ever have any moments when you were concerned here? Or has it been smooth enough?
Smooth enough, thank God.
At the start, when you obviously it's a new environment for us, you're a wee bit worried, but you soon realise that the drills we do and the group we're with, you soon gain a lot of confidence in how safe we are. So it does make it a lot easier to talk to your family at home and reassure them.
My name is Dylan Farrell from Athlone, from 6th Battalion.
You're a private.
A private, yeah, 3-star private.
I'm Private Ryan Gaffey from 6th Battalion Athlone.
I'm Private Aaron Clary from 6th Battalion Athlone.
Okay, we'll start with you, Aaron. Yeah. What is your position here in the FRC?
So I'm in 2 Platoon as a rifleman, and I'm a QRF dismount, so it's a quick reaction force. So if we're called, we have 15 minutes to move, no later then. And we just have to go out, do a comp plan in the other UNOPs, and get casualties and clear the place and bring back the casualties back to her.
Okay, and have you enjoyed it?
Yeah, it's a very good mission. It's more than I expected, more work, keeping fit as well, so it's good.
What would a typical day, is there a typical day for you, and what would it be?
So it would be getting up, getting breakfast, parading, and then there'd be like details like cleaning around or stuff like that. Then we'd like be doing mouth drills, so like with the weapons in the bunkers, so trying to like get casualties out and stuff like that, and then just lunch and train away, get fit, and dinner then.
And what time do you get up at? What time do you start at?
Around 6:30.
Right, okay, that's early.
Yeah, pretty early.
Is do you have to get used to that, or I suppose are you starting early?
Yeah, you get used to it in training. Like, you'd be up early, so it's not too bad. Like.
And is it how many trips have you had overseas?
It is my first trip now.
Oh, okay. So, yeah. How did the reality compare to what it was you thought it'd be like in your head?
Yes, yeah, completely different. I think. Like, as the older lads will guide you around, like for if it was your first time, so yeah, it's not too bad. Like,
and would you do it again? Or would you
100%. Yeah.
Cheers. Thanks. And yourself, what is your position here?
So similar to Aaron, as well. So I'm in a different section, so I'm in section 1 in platoon 1, so I'd be the same. So we went on QRF, we get 15 minutes to move down to the MOAGs, and then wait for the taskings then, like if there's a call over that. That's really it then.
And I presume you've had plenty of these 15 minute call outs, you've had to run to the MOAGs and stuff.
Yeah, there's been plenty of them, yeah.
Do you get adrenaline when it happens, or do you just go into work mode?
Just work mode, yeah, because like you're told before you come out what you're expected through, like, so you're kind of used to it when you get the first few, one or two, like, so.
So it's easy enough, is it? You know, your training stands in good stead.
Yeah, it's just repetitive enough, like, you know, when you get the call out, you're all switched on to get down to the cars in under the 15 minutes. We're actually quite quick enough, like, you get down 2 or 3 minutes, whatever, everyone's ready to go, like, for the call out.
Have you ever felt worried or nervous?
You're a bit nervous, like, especially with the ones when you get outside the gates or whatever, but we're used to it now, like, and they've trained, you know, for what to happen if anything is to happen.
And how many missions have you had?
This is my first as well.
So, was it what you thought it would be?
You see, my dad and all was in the army, so he told me different things like when he was away. So I kind of expected, you know, if anything was to happen, be used to just do the drills and all. So it would be grand.
And did that make it easier for your family that your father, I presume, and you have other relatives in the Defence Forces?
My dad was in it, and my granddad, like, so he kind of told me a few stories. So
did that make, because I know all families worry, does that make it easier, do you think, for families back home that, you know, they've been there before and done it?
Yeah, I think so, yeah, like, especially from what he said when he was away, he said what to expect or whatever, so I said not to worry, or I told him obviously not to worry, you know, it'd be grand.
And do you remember your father being away when you were a kid?
Yeah.
What was that like?
It wasn't too bad. Like, he used to bring me back some nice stuff, so it was all right.
Thanks. Right, finally yourself, what's your position?
I'm the same as Ryan there as well. I'm his platoon. We're all on the QRF as well. When you get a call, you go straight down to the cars, come back up to the gate then and get ready to go out the gate.
And is this your first mission as well?
First mission as well, yeah.
What made you go for it?
Just a different experience. Try something new.
Could you have applied or asked to go to Lebanon instead?
The Syrian came up first, so I applied to Syria first and I got it.
Okay. And did you ever have any moments that you were a bit concerned for yourself or your colleagues?
No, it's been quiet so far. Everyone's doing their job and nothing happened so far.
And I know it's hard work, but do you enjoy it?
It is a good adrenaline when you run down to the cars.
And what's the morale, like the camaraderie? From the outset, it seems it's a very good group. Everybody seems to get on.
Everyone's very close, so you can have the all crack together. Someone is down, the odds help each other out.
Would you do it again?
100%, yeah.
And what, would you like to go to Lebanon?
Yeah, let's try Lebanon this next time, yeah. Cool gang, lovely
I'd
stuff.
I'd say probably make friends for life with these type of things, do you? Like,
yeah,
100%,
yeah. My uncle is actually a sergeant major over here, so he's giving me a tough time over here. Like, so it's grand having him over here, like, looking after me and that, so it's good.
Do you just look after each other? Is there that sense of everybody?
Yeah, 100%. Like, we'd be best mates back home, like, so.
Even outside the army.
Even outside the army, like, so.
And does that get more intense over here?
A few fights.
Yeah, do back and forth.
Like. No, but I mean the sense of friendship and, you know, helping each other out, it is more intense here.
Oh yeah, being over here, like, you're here 24/7 with each other, so.
Major General Murrahood, thanks for talking to us today. You're with us on this trip to Undoff. I know you've served here, but you spoke earlier to the entire company. What was your message to them?
I think I had a couple of messages. I think the first was to tell them to their faces what I think in private, which is how immensely proud I am of them and what they've achieved and all the reports that I've got during my time here. And, you know, we receive regular reports from UNHQ in New York. And certainly the messages I've been getting from the senior mission leadership here is of the excellence of our people here on the ground. And that resonates with what we hear from the mission leadership in UNIFIL and in the other places that we serve with distinction around the Middle East, with the Observer Mission, for example, which serves in various countries. And that's very gratifying for me to come. It's not telling me something I didn't know already, but certainly it confirms my pride in the excellence of our people. And that culture of mission delivery and the importance of doing a good job in the right way and really being an exemplar for all that's good about the Irish soldier.
Why do you think the Irish soldier is so good at peacekeeping?
You know, we've a saying about leadership being a combination of character and competence. And our people have competence in spades. And we prove that when we go overseas, for example, not only in these contexts, but when our people do courses and competitions overseas with other militaries. So very pleased to say that, you know, we have a high bar in respect of competence. But even more important, it's the character of our people. It's their ethos. It's the way they deal not only with our multinational partners, of which we have many both here and elsewhere, but it's also how they deal with the locals and the local citizens. And it's very much based on the values of the Irish people, that friendliness, that openness to other people and other perspectives, and also to the respect that our people show and have for the citizens of Syria in this case, and of course the citizens of Lebanon in the UNIFIL mission. And that resonates with the locals. And that's not just me saying that. You'd expect me to say that as the DCOS. But that's the feedback we get. I had a meeting earlier this week with the senior Syrian Arab delegate, the general who's responsible from the Syrian forces in respect of the UN here, and he very much emphasised that about the high esteem in which our people are, you know, kept in Syria because of how they deal with the Syrian people and the people that they meet. So it's a combination, really, of character and competence.
And there is that character of a UN peacekeeper, an Irish UN peacekeeper, but obviously in this sense, I think you use the term in the Irish company here, or the UNDOF's insurance policy. So that means that they have to be robust at the same time. But would you agree that they can be both?
They can, of course they can. And that's, I mean, that's, you know, the beauty of it is that we pride ourselves in being highly professional. We are the people that they call when someone's in trouble as the first reserve company here. And really, we're the last throw of the dice for the force commander when other contingents might be in difficulty. We have particular skills, and not just with our armoured element, which is on very short notice to move 24 hours a day, but also the other really world-class specialist skills that we bring to the table. Things like, you know, engineer search, demining, explosive ordnance disposal, and many other skills that we have and that we're known for, in fact, that we run courses in back in Ireland for other nations. So it's really about the added value that the Irish bring as a strategic enabler, not only in extremis, but also from a day-to-day bringing value where it's needed in the mission. And it's from that, it's in that context that, you know, the mission leadership here will be sorry to see the Irish contingent pulling out of UNDOF.
Do you think that from a private or a gunner to a lieutenant colonel or colonel, are the Irish world-class peacekeepers?
Absolutely. And, you know, it'd be easy for me to say that. You'd expect me to say it. But how we know that is by external validation, always. And we validate ourselves, for example, through foreign training courses where our students consistently are in the top 5 to 10% of performers. We validate it in external education with our third level partners, for example, like we have University of Galway, Carlow, you know, CETU, Maynooth, TUD, etc. And again, our students are consistently high performing there. We've seen it on the ground in real practical tests, like during the COVID pandemic, where our people really perform, you know, and provide that added value to the state and to our ultimate bosses, the citizens. So there are so many ways in which our people demonstrate every day, every week at home and abroad that they're world class. And we emphasised, and I know I've spoken to the troops here, that just because you're small doesn't mean that we don't aspire and that we are not world class. And we prove that time and time again. Again, it's easy for me to say that, but the external validation and the research that we do and the scorecards that we get from our partners, from our academic partners, from our military partners, from our peacekeeping partners, and from our Irish partners, such as an Garda Síochána, the Health Service Executive, and etc. during COVID, I think, you know, I'm quite comfortable in saying and take a lot of pride in saying that our people are world-class. Though we might be small, we are world-class.
So that's the end of this special pod from Camp Fawar in Syria. Hope you've enjoyed it. It's something out of the usual. It's not our normal fare, but we just wanted to highlight the great work that the Defence Forces have been doing. And it's only when you go abroad and you see the esteem with which our peacekeepers are held that you realise what a really great job they're doing. So that's us from Camp Fawar, and we will be back to normal crime next week. Thanks very much.